And now we take a look once again at the past week's events here in the Vatican. Our resident Vatican expert, Joan Lewis, sat down with me to review some of the highlights of the past 7 days, beginning with the summit of world leaders on food security that took place in Rome this past week.
A very, very important summit. The previous one was something like 6 years ago. And now we're looking at huge rises in the cost of food, which is affecting all of us, but it certainly is going to affect the very, very poor, the developing countries.
And it's led to violence already in some of those countries.
It has, sure, it has. And then you've got the price of fuel, which has to be used to transport a lot of food, the price of fuel going up. I mean, you even have, you know, fishermen in different countries rebelling. You have truckers lined up for miles and miles and closing highways. So worldwide, this is just not a European or American or a certain continent's problem.
And in his message to it, Pope Benedict spoke very specifically about the global aspects of this problem.
Well, you know, he did. The Pope, in his message, used the exact same words that he used only a couple days earlier when he spoke to the Centesimus Annus Pro Pontifice Foundation. A lot of the members from the branches around the world were here. And the Pope did say that the great challenge of today is to globalize not just economic and commercial interest, but also the call for solidarity, while respecting and taking advantage of the contribution of all components of society. And when I read that in the Pope's message, I thought, wow, this is deja vu. And I went back over my weekend reports, and I saw those exact same words. Not slightly different, but exactly the same words. So he's, and the thing is, the foundation that he spoke to Saturday was meeting on social capital and human development. And there's a little bit of a tie in there, obviously, between their themes. But the Pope's message really should be read by anyone interested in this topic and interested just in social justice, if you will, because the Pope, he urged leaders to overcome the obvious paradox of a multilateral consensus that continues to be in crisis because it is still subordinated to the decisions of a few. And I mean, he highlighted some points I think a lot of us know. He just came right out and said them. That was one of them. But he said, obviously, he called hunger and malnutrition unacceptable in today's world, because today's world has levels of production, resources, and knowledge sufficient to put an end to such dramas, hunger and malnutrition, and their consequences. So if you have a bad decision-making process, or even if you have any corruption at high levels in government, and food is taken for government leaders in certain countries instead of going to the people, then it is a huge problem.
There was some talk, wasn't there, before this summit that the Pope would have met individually or even as a group with some of these world leaders. In the end, that didn't come about.
No, an interesting point. And actually, the Vatican had to issue a statement. They didn't have to, but I mean, they did issue a statement on this because, as perhaps our listeners do know from television and radio reports and other news, Ahmadinejad of Iran, of course, was in Rome. He spoke. He didn't even gather any applause because he just had this verbal attack on the rest of the known world and, you know, obviously particularly Israel and so forth. And he didn't garner any applause. And then Mugabe from Zimbabwe was in town. He's literally a persona non grata. He's not even supposed to be in Europe. Somehow he made it to this conference. In any event, the request had been on the part of a number of world leaders to meet with the Holy Father, and he simply didn't have the time to meet individually with them. And even to meet them as a group just turned out to be difficult, even for their schedules. And the release issued by the press office recalled that in April 2006, so this was a year after he'd become Pope, but the Secretary of State had informed diplomatic missions to the Holy See in Rome here that it would be difficult to accept such requests for audiences on the occasion of international congresses and conferences, and especially when you have that huge number of leaders. So,
but certainly this issue of hunger is something very close to the Pope's own heart. I mean, we saw him just a week earlier at his
exactly.
Angelus.
And even the Angelus was not the first time that he has ever spoken of this. When there are various crises in the world, food-related even, he has mentioned it. And before I go to the Angelus Sunday, I do want to say something important. There's a Susan Shepherd of Doctors Without Borders. And she, when she got up to speak, she said that in Niger, where she's worked for the past few years. Higher prices, of course, have forced families to buy less food and often less nutritional food. And she said the only one who really focused on hunger and malnutrition was the Pope. So she brought up the fact that Benedict obviously highlighted that in his speech.
That was an interesting NGO forum, I think, going on alongside the world leaders,
right, the doctors, the Doctors Without Borders. But no, Sunday the Angelus was on a number of different topics, actually. The Pope asked for prayers for the people of the hit by natural disasters. We've all been following Myanmar. We've been following events in China. And obviously the Pope always, too, speaks about what that particular day in the church means liturgically. And he recalled that the Feast of the Sacred Heart of Jesus, he recalled that obviously the whole month of June is dedicated to the Sacred Heart. So for people who listen to them regularly, I'm sure they note that his Sunday Angelus reflections are mini catechesis of, again, whatever the liturgical event might be. And then he also uses that occasion in greeting people to point out a certain world situation.
Let's look at some of the other groups that were here. You mentioned that foundation. There was an interesting pilgrimage from the Diocese of Turin on Monday, wasn't there?
Oh, that was great. And that interested me a great deal simply because the Shroud of Turin is obviously in the city of Turin.
The Pope made an important announcement,
didn't
he?
He did indeed, saying that it was going to be shown in 2010. It has not been shown that often. The last time was the Jubilee year of 2000. John Paul he made one, or was it two trips to Turin? Because I know it was exposed in the fall of 78. Of 1978, the very same month, I believe, that he was elected Pope. But I know he did see it once, for sure.
And Pope Benedict himself said that he's hoping, God willing, to go up and see it on
That's what he said, kind of in off-the-cuff remarks. The very first magazine piece I ever had published was on the Shroud of Turin. And I had done, 6 months of research, and this was pre-internet days, let me tell you. So this was actually sitting down and reading books and talking to people. And
have you been to see it just
and
now?
I never have. And
so
the,
you may be heading up to Turin in the spring of 2010.
I'm very excited, exactly. And when I was going to go up and see it in the fall of 1978, actually at that time I was on a special assignment to the New York Times in Egypt. So I was not there for the Shroud. I was not in Rome for John Paul's election. I came back shortly after that.
But it certainly is a subject which continues to fascinate people, whatever they believe about its authenticity and original production.
Well, they did the carbon dating, and it was said that, it's actually, it's a fake something or other because it's from the 13th century. And, of course, it now really turns out that the part of the tissue that they did do the carbon dating on had been a very closer part of where the Shroud had been I think it was 1532, there had been a huge fire. And the case in which it was that was made out of silver, the molten silver melted and got onto the Shroud and left its marks. Well, anybody who knows anything about carbon dating knows that a fire in the 1500s, if something is actually authentically from the year zero, shall we say, 2,000 years ago, that will change the dating of it. But the one thing no one has been able to explain is how the marks got on the Shroud. They are not man-made. They are not painted on there. They are not woven into the fabric. So no one can explain exactly how those marks got on. And the church has never come out and proclaimed it like they might have proclaimed the veracity of Lourdes or Fatima or something, but the church has never spoken against it. And by the way, it belongs to the Pope now, too. It belonged to the family, the Savoy royal house, for decades, centuries, I think, actually. And then it was given to the Holy Father. It was given to John Paul, and of course now, if you will, belongs to, even though it's up in Turin, it belongs to his successor.
Just time in the meantime to look at one or two other stories here. Another message from Pope Benedict, this time taken to Russia by Cardinal Kasper, the Vatican's top spokesman on ecumenical relations, to the Russian Orthodox leader Alexei II.
Indeed. This is really high Christian unity, of course, is, and very much so with the Orthodox. It's very high on the Pope's agenda. And anything, if it's too steps forward and they're very, very slow, he's still going to take them. So it was a message that the handed to the Patriarch of Moscow and all Russia by Cardinal Casper during his visit. And again, the Pope is just, he's always extending this
Hand of friendship.
Yeah, and he says, it's with joy I reflect on the experience of the growing closeness between us, accompanied by the shared desire to promote authentic Christian values and witness to our Lord in ever deeper communion. And those words, in a way, you might say, really summarize any of his previous letters, any of his efforts, really, to have a meeting is what
there is still a lot of hope, isn't there, that he will be able to travel. John Paul II wanted so dearly to travel to Moscow,
exactly.
Didn't quite manage to during his lifetime. There is a lot of hope for this, but only when the conditions are right.
Exactly. Working behind the scenes, a lot of those conditions, you know, we don't quite know what progress is being made. Certain things we're told, and others, people just work very quietly behind the scenes to make those things happen.
Many thanks there to Joan Lewis for that review of events here in the Vatican over the past week.